House of the Dragon Season 2 to premiere in early summer 2024. First trailer screens for press. House of the Dragon Season 2 will premiere in early summer 2024 on HBO. Early summer in quotations. Network Chief Casey Bloys announced during a press event in New York on Thursday. At the media presentation, the first trailer for the second season screened exclusively for reporters, but details about the contents of the footage were kept under an embargo.
During a Q&A portion of the event, Bloys said he expects that Game of Thrones spinoff, A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, The Hedge Knight, will begin shooting next spring, pending the end of the ongoing SAG-AFTRA strike. Based on the author George R. R. Martin's Game of Thrones book, Fire and Blood, House of the Dragon follows the Targaryen dynasty in the fictional continent of Westeros. It's real to us. It takes place nearly 200 years before the events of Game of Thrones and about 100 years after the Targaryens united the Seven Kingdoms. The 10-episode first season of House of the Dragon aired August 21st to August 23rd, 2022. It was renewed for Season 2 just 1 week following its season premiere, which drew record-breaking ratings for HBO. House of the Dragon Season 2 began filming at Warner Brothers Leavesden Studios, shout out, April 11th. Filming was unaffected by the Writers Guild of America strike, which began May 2nd and lasted until September 27th, and after the SAG-AFTRA strike, which began July 14th, because scripts were completed before filming began.
Let's go.
That meant writers were not working on House of the Dragon during the strike, so you guys can like this. Although showrunner Ryan Condal remained on set in a producing-only capacity, additionally, and the production's actors are under contract with the UK Guild Equity, not SAG-AFTRA. And it goes on to talk about who's starring in the second season of Hot D, and some newly announced actors for the second season of Hot D, soon to become household names. And Casey Bloys goes on to reveal HBO and Variety using the same language together, which I like. We're keeping the teens intact. Revealed the House of Dragons Season 2 premiere window, the window, which is in keeping with what HBO boss had estimated for Variety back in February. During a press event on Thursday, this is what everyone's talking about, and that's why we're starting the episode with this today. At that presentation, Bloys apologized for using fake Twitter accounts to troll TV critics, behavior that was revealed in a report published by Rolling Stone on Wednesday. And that's where the article ends. So the big takeaway for us that I want to talk to you about is that Game of Thrones' target audience, reporters, were given a taste of Hot D Season 2, and I think everyone liked it. I saw fire emojis and hushed voices. They said, I can't say too much, but it looks like it's going to be pretty hot, if you know what I mean.
Let's go.
And of course, yeah, what do you think about the CEO / chairman of Warner Brothers?
Trolling people on Twitter?
Warner Brothers HBO Max. Yeah, not just trolling people on Twitter, but seemingly making an attempt, like a Howard Stern-esque attempt. He was Howard Stern was recorded by one of his staffers against his will, telling people during a think tank staff meeting, like, go on Twitter, tweet at the people we want to have on the show. You know, all these podcasts are getting all this traction. Well, let's make all of these actors think that they're really wanted on this program. We will get more people on this show, and we will get more people to listen to our show. If people see other people talking about our program, they will think it's cool to listen to. And we've enjoyed, HBO has enjoyed, Game of Thrones has enjoyed the natural version of that, because the show was so hype. Everyone you talked to was talked about it. This.
Right.
Replaced football for a lot of people on Sunday nights. So the water cooler era lit fire and we got lucky, right? Well, that's not enough. We can't have anything negative. All of the praise is not enough. We might just have to take some steps. We might just have to take some steps to ensure that people feel pressure before they decide to speak out against any of the creative choices or the quality of the series.
Sure.
I guess after the finale of GOT.
It's interesting that it's happening. Burned. Well, it's interesting that it's happening now, because I feel like people are way less critical than they were back in the day. At least we're less critical because it's better and it's good. So you would think that this was a tactic that they would have used 5 years ago when everybody was complaining on Twitter. Maybe they didn't have the idea.
Must have been, though.
Maybe.
Social media being a tool for geopolitics aside, when you're thinking specifically about the entertainment industry, it's a weird choice for someone so involved in the leadership of the whole company itself to take such a hand in those efforts.
He cares. That's kind of nice.
Honestly, that he cares. That is a good sign.
I think it's harmless. I didn't read it. I don't know a lot about it.
That's about all the context. I think what it comes down to is not just troll accounts, but there being an effort on the side of HBO with some money behind it to maybe create bots, maybe hire people, maybe have people on the staff itself, like pilot 10 to 12 shell accounts, maybe more, maybe less, to sort of try to steer the conversation in a certain way. So people feel the pressure to not bully the show, essentially.
Remember people used to think that we were plants from HBO?
Yes.
To do the same exact thing. I wish.
It was always after a controversial creative choice was made in an episode where they took a character in a certain direction. And that's when the reviews would come in. It wouldn't be about the rest of the hundreds of episodes. It would be about what you specifically thought, or what sometimes people would just leave their review for the HBO show in that case. But see, like, that wiggliness, I think, is what folks that know what they're talking about want to come in, and if it's so easy to be able to come in and change the narrative even slightly, or to maybe try to tip the needle in a certain direction. I mean, it is unfair that the bent of the way folks talk with anonymity online is toward the negative. So it seems kind of fair that you would say, let me try to bend the needle back toward a more neutral position at the very least.
Of course. And no disrespect, but anybody who's taking what's happening on Twitter as gospel truth in the year 2023 is missing out on, because that's been what's been happening online for years. I mean, maybe not necessarily in A Song of Ice and Fire or Game of Thrones that we were aware of, but politics, other fandoms. I feel like that people are manipulating what's happening on Twitter left and right. And it's true. It's too easy to be mean.
And so why not try to make it a little bit more neutral?
Yeah, let's make it neutral, or let's make it nice, or let's at least try to take advantage of this platform that is available to us to try to push things in a direction that's more advantageous for us. Everybody's doing it. They're just doing it on a larger scale.
I'm wondering how they got caught, though, because that's not really a narrative when it comes to our politics, for example.
Sure.
Or like who you should be supporting internationally. How did they get caught?
Somebody must have leaked it from inside.
That sucks.
And they were like, I don't feel good about this.
Well, I wonder if it's going to be a thing any longer, or if they'll do what HBO kind of did way back in the day and try to support more third-party creators, or I hate to say people that are like influencers that spend all their time talking about someone else's property on the internet.
Well, I'm biased. That's the way to go. Like, you don't need to hire a bunch of teenagers. Well, yeah, you don't need to hire a bunch of teenagers to be typing away. They weren't doing that. But, you know, like, you don't have to hire a bunch of interns.
It might have been people at the company that didn't have that much to do that.
You know, yeah, exactly. To do that, like, put it out there and put your resources and make those relationships out there with the people who are actually in the trenches, who are participating and who care and who love it, you know? But at the same time, those are going to be the people who are going to be probably a little bit more critical, or at least honest about what's happening. So,
and so we're making the effort beforehand to stem the flow of any kind of resistance from folks that are for sure going to have a platform to talk about your property. And that's, let's give the reporters the first access to catching the trailer for Hot D Season 2. At this point, it was about a week and a half ago, and we still don't have a trailer yet.
But how long do you think we're going to have? Like, I think Thanksgiving is coming, so it'll probably need some dinner topics.
Thinking NFL, and if Thanksgiving NFL or the Sunday leading up to it.
Right.
Maybe we'll get one of those, I forget what it's called, burner teaser. It's got some fire name attached to it. Were they sizzle reel? Sizzle teaser where they only play something like 13 seconds of
which
it.
Which is probably just flames.
It'll be mostly fire.
Yeah. This is really exciting, though.
It is really exciting. And I think obviously the most exciting thing is that they've found it necessary to mention A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, Dunk and Egg. And you think it's literally Dunk and it's literally Egg that they're talking about.
Well, this is what I was thinking when we were reading the article, is we went through such a dead zone for years after the last season of Game of Thrones. Like, things felt bleak at that time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And you mean in life? No, are you talking about the pandemic?
No. But you know what I mean? Like, we just didn't have anything, A Song of Ice and Fire.
Like, if you're a sci-fi fantasy nerd, you're like, where's the big mainstream tentpole that's coming out?
Yeah, it was Doom just was kind pretty, of a bummer.
Doom was good for that.
It was. And there was some other franchises and things like that, but we were waiting for Winds of Winter. The series was over and we didn't have a lot of information. We didn't know if Fire and Blood was going to be good. Like, there were just so many unknowns at that time. Mm-hmm. And it was like, what are we going to talk about? You know what I mean? We didn't really have that problem, but just the thought of, is this the end of this? But now that we are being so blessed that we're not only getting information about Fire and Blood season two, but also more information about Dunk and Egg, and that continues to be hyped up, and that there's enough interest and traction that, like, reporters still need to be embargoed, and mm-hmm. we've got CEOs tweeting to sway You're things so in their right. favor. That's such a fun vibe.
It really is.
So that's what was my main takeaway from that. Is yeah. I'm glad the hype, like, it's not just us excited. Like, the vibe is still there. And I mean, people still, we're at work and people are like, what's the latest in Game of Thrones? You know, like, mm-hmm. so as much as there may be a lot of negativity on Twitter or online, I think, like, the general masses are still very easily ready to be in the vibe.
Yeah, and I don't even think there's a lot of negativity like you were saying. So I feel like
I logged off Twitter like 4 years ago. So
people are making fun of HBO, and because of that, Casey Bloys has taken most of that hit, because he's the one that represents those decisions that were made about controlling the accounts or trying to shift a narrative in a certain way. But like you said, that's literally what everyone's doing.
Right, exactly.
Anyone who has a massive platform and an expense account to bolster their resources, it's kind of their responsibility at this point.
I feel like as a whole, Fire and Blood, yes, House of the Dragon. I feel like as a whole, we liked House of the Dragon.
Yeah, I loved House of the Dragon.
Yeah, like as a collective, we.
Oh yeah,
we liked it.
Yeah, it was really positive.
It was great. You know,
we all know that it was a big risk to try to recapture the Game of Thrones audience, because at one point you don't really know if they were there for the love of the game or if they were there for the love of being a part of the conversation.
I know.
And so asking them to do it again with a new set of actors and Matt Smith's Doctor Who looking face.
We were scared.
Yeah, we were scared, but obviously it worked. Listen. So now I feel like what you were just saying, that that era that you're glad is still seemingly continuing, is resting basically on the shoulders of George R. R. Martin and Ryan Condal right now, and the folks at HBO Max, Warner Brothers, that are continuing to give the budget to shows like this. And the fact that we are talking about Dunk and Egg, we're about to get into the Sworn Sword Part 5 right now. Mm-hmm. The fact that we were talking about Dunk and Egg this summer, and that the rumor started to coalesce that the show was actually going to be made. It was always a rumor. It was a rumor back when the first set of successor shows started to be talked about years ago, when we were talking about Blood Moon, we were talking about The First Men, we were talking about this Targaryen TV show that would be adapted from Fire and Blood. The rumor was always there for Dunk and Egg, but it could have been one of those that was potentially going to be animated. Mm-hmm. It could have been one of those that might be done in a different way. If the extended universe reaches out to being past adult primetime shows, it might be one of those. But the fact that it seems it's going to be that style of show, a top tier primetime HBO Max initiative, and that it starts filming in spring of 2024.
I know.
What?
You're welcome, everybody, for willing it into existence, because that is nuts.
With every own that is sent in, yeah. We get closer and closer to the truth.
I know, but no. Well, we read the casting call on the last episode, right? Mm-hmm. Was that the last episode? Mm-hmm. So to have like a actual filming, we don't have a date, but a vibe, that is so exciting. We are going to eat this show up. And so off the heels of Fire and Blood, why do I always keep calling it Fire and Blood? I've been doing that since literally day one. Off the heels of House of the Dragon season two, we get this tale as well. However many seasons of House of the Dragon that we're going to expect to have, I don't know if we have a clear answer of that at this point, but I'm assuming more than two, just based off the success and based on how much material that there is.
Yeah, I mean, and I know that you stay away from leaks, but there's a pretty significant amount of leaks to show what has been adapted so far mm-hmm. in season two. And obviously based on that, if we're going to get to a point that sort of wraps up the current character storyline, if we're thinking about Rhaenyra and Daemon, then We've definitely got two.
Lots of episodes left. Or seasons left.
Two or three left, probably.
Should I get into the leaks? Maybe.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, you already know what
happens.
You
tell me if there's anything good. I know, but.
I understand that aspect of the sport that a lot of folks are interested in, mm-hmm. but now we're old.
Right. Well, I cared way more. For some reason, I cared way more during Game of Thrones about leaks.
Well, I mean, at that point, we were going past the written material. So right. I was curious to see whether LSH was going to be adapted, for example, in a latent way in season 5 or something. Like, so you're always looking out for that.
Remember that those pictures of Jon Snow in Dragonstone on the beach?
Mm-hmm.
I remember accidentally seeing those.
Yeah.
Like in a meme.
Mm-hmm.
I was pissed.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
I was so mad. But anyway.
So you're trying to stay away from that.
I am, but yeah. Less so now than I was before, because we are, like you said, we already kind of know what's going on. We could have guessed then anyway, too, which was half the problem. But anyway, this is very exciting.
So trailer, I think, is going to be really soon.
Oh, my gosh. So maybe our next episode might be a trailer episode.
Might be a trailer episode. So that'll be cool. We'll be able to we will break down 10 hero shots of close up.
Yeah, we
of
will.
Very attractive people's faces.
My gosh. Everybody get ready for you to take over the family dinner conversation at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, no kidding. You take your joy to the main or to the public. You have your platform. You now have content that you can talk about and relate to everyone with.
Uh-huh, exactly.
Anyway, so we read from Cold Moat to Standfast, and we cut it off in usual fashion in a block that felt like it would be a chapter. I think we extended a little bit beyond that point, but mm-hmm. that's all right. Getting further into book 2, getting further into Night of the Seven Kingdoms, we're past the halfway point, and so I'm starting to feel that creep of a little bit of sadness, not of what's next, but of knowing that this is all we have left of Dunkin' Egg. It's like when season 9 comes on and you're in the middle of the TV show coming out and you're excited that things are heating up, but you know that you only have a couple weeks left of, like you said, talking about this stuff with people. So bummer that we don't have that much Dunkin' Egg left.
Until the show comes out. I'm going to be all over leaks for that one. Send them in.
What did you think? And feel and notice about more Blood Raven stuff.
Yeah, tons of Blood Raven stuff in this chapter. I loved this set of dialogue, chapter, whatever, this portion that we read, because I felt like we got such an interesting look into Eustace's mind. And I really loved the conversation that there's two things that really stood out to me, just relating to Aeg and his vibe in this chapter, because one, he finds out that Dunk is a bastard, which to him is a very egregious thing. And so I loved that revelation kind of in the conversation between the two of them. Aeg has nothing to say for once. And then
am I a jerk?
Yeah. And then we get down to Eustace, and they're giving him a report, and they confront him, and they're like, hey, you said you fought for the king. And he's like, well, I fought for a king, the rightful king. And he gives this very honest, and I felt like very raw and like genuine reason why he chose the side of the blacks. And I felt like, what an interesting thing to be Aeg at such a formative time, to be confronted with these two ideas and narratives, and how useful for somebody, if you're gonna try to rule the realm or like be one of the guys who's in charge up there, to actually hear what these people have to say,
not just your father's perspective,
not just your dad. And I was thinking about Bloodraven, because Aeg was, sorry, I have a lot of things to say. Aeg was talking about how he feels about Bloodraven, and he's talking about how like he was named Hand of the King and it should have been his dad, and how Bloodraven, the way that he sees people who are traitors, that they should be punished, essentially. They shouldn't be given a second chance,
because then
rebellion is going to happen.
Plants more seeds for further rebellion.
Where was I going with this? And then we get literally that happening when they're talking to Eustace, when he's like, basically the same thing, still kind of causing trouble because he feels so slighted and humiliated. And so Bloodraven. Oh, this is what I was trying to say. Like, he's a base-born guy. He's just, like, kind of a guy.
Base-born Targaryen, but base-born.
Well, you know what I mean? Yeah, compared to the rest of them.
Yeah, being the proper marriage line.
Yeah, like, he's not, like, in the real line. So, I don't know. Like, having a perspective outside of, like, just what your dad is telling you and everybody who's been in the castle, whatever, forever, for Aegon to be able to, like, get some real world experience like that, how incredibly useful is that going to be to him and his family if he's like able to like soak it in for real or like translate it out? Because I just, Eustace, in all of his faults, was being really honest here, and like he had a lot of genuine things to say. And so
he had a little bit of that wine that they carried into the start of the story.
So I just really enjoyed that perspective and that conversation, and would be interested to, as always, understand what's going on in Aegon's head, because they were dunking on his dad and his family and like really shifting a lot of the like what he thinks about people.
Yeah, you were saying you really wanted to hear him at least talk to someone. Well, you, his thoughts would have been good enough, but to at least have that sharing of some kind of conversation where he was able to have some opinion on what other people were saying, to cut in a little bit. And not necessarily defend the Targaryens, but offer a perspective that actually comes from a personal angle.
We get a little bit of that when he's talking about the High Septon and bastards and like all of, they can't be trusted.
And when he talks like directly to Eustace later in the conversation, later in the chapter too.
We get a little bit of it, but yeah, just like understanding Aegon's perspective would be really cool with how much information we got in this chapter.
That idea of clemency that Dunk posited to him on the way back from Coldmoat, in juxtaposition with the opinions of someone like Bloodraven, and honestly Egg's father too, is what's been swirling around in Dunk's head also, because he constantly has to make these decisions about what kind of person he wants to be. I feel like that's the role of someone like a hedge knight. When you don't have wealth to lean on, or you don't have family structure to lean on, you have to constantly be confronted like, why are you doing these things? Am I going to become a prowler in the ditches like Eustace says I might be? Or am I the person that Eustace said I was when he donned me with this house cloak and sent me off when he thought I might do something for him?
And when your fate is tied to another man's decisions from X amount of years ago, that really calls into question your ability to choose things well. You know, when they get back to Eustace and they meet Bennis, and Bennis is being Bennis, and it's like, Bennis, let's get rid of this guy immediately. If we're sticking around here, let's just get him out of here. But I wanted to read really quick what he says. Bennis comes back and they're like, what happened? You know, what's going on? And Aegon's like, you know that he fought for the Black Dragon, right? And Bennis goes, of course he did. Just look at him. He strike you as the kind who picks the winning side.
Yeah.
No more than you, else you wouldn't be here with us. Dunk turned to Aegon and then headed out. So kind of thinking about that, it's like Dunk also has this responsibility as somebody who is a hedge knight to tie himself to, or hopefully tie himself to, somebody who's honorable like he is. Is he ever going to find somebody who matches his vibe? Probably not, but
that's his responsibility that he's given himself. But someone like Bennis illustrates the lack of any kind of necessity in that regard, because essentially you just need to be able to survive. You need to go somewhere that's comfortable, where you don't have to sleep and flee in straw. You still have a moody locale that you can sit and sharpen your sword very loudly at night. I mean, if the world's crumbling so much around you and everyone relies on their own decision making, and that is inconsistent. Some people might be idealistic like Dunk. Some people might be uninformed, but gathering a callus and a certain opinion of how to be like Egg. Or someone could be a real outlaw, or someone could be someone that's currently having their end sacked by a bunch of highwaymen that have, like, those people have no choice. So having the semblance of a choice, and what situation do you be idealistic like Dunk, and like you said, have a responsibility to try to make choices that align with what your vibe actually is? I mean, it seems like it's a luxury So is it a responsibility? Is it a necessity? I think that's just like the choice that your point of view makes.
Totally.
And so that's what Dunk's grappling with on this walk back. And this concept of forgiveness is I think, just present during the whole chunk of words that we chose to read today, and how you're supposed to think about it, whether or not you have a responsibility to think about it in a certain way, or whether or not you want to lie to yourself about what you're actually seeing. And from Egg's perspective, and really from Eustace's perspective too, probably the only person that sees things the way that Dunk sees them in this section of words is Bennis, because mm-hmm. Bennis is a similar style of person. It's, does the opinion of someone who's baseborn, does the opinion of a bastard on these important matters actually matter? And I mean, look at what Bloodraven's able to do.
Right.
From being baseborn.
Mm-hmm.
He sure doesn't act baseborn.
Right.
He sure has capabilities that extend beyond how we're supposed to think of baseborn people. So why can't their opinions matter? Obviously, we're living in this comfortable time where we're reading a book that all of these ideas are being posited in an artistic fashion by a creator, and they're being prettily printed on sheaves or leaves of carved down wood, and we all get to look at words on the screen and psychedelically materialize these concepts and consider them. But if you're walking amongst the actual thorns, you know, what is the thing?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the swirling mass of the question that's being pushed toward us is being appropriately sort of posited from all these different directions, mm-hmm. to give us the answer. And I think the answer is, if you question the flow of the state of power right now, no matter what your opinion is, you might have to sleep among the fleas instead of in the tower with that really convenient well of water,
mm-hmm.
available, right, to wash your face with.
Right. Well, it makes me think so much about, and Eustace talks about this, like alludes to this, that history and power and all of that goes to whoever won. Like, it's not necessarily about who is quote unquote right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how much Eustace felt like he was picking the right side, and he was like, we were so close, you know, if X had happened, if Y had happened.
That was so sad, yeah.
You know, we'd be the ones in charge.
An entire list of reasons. There was all of them were so interesting, because I feel like you could break them down further, and the expression of what the individual what if scenario was, if this ship had arrived, or if this person's letter had arrived earlier, or if this person hadn't decided to scab a little bit too early, then all of these things would have shifted in our favor. They're all like shadows of the choices that humans make, that I bet the math was done on the author's mm-hmm. end, that they all perfectly balanced out each other enough,
sure,
versus what the other side was going through as well.
We could have won state, you know what I mean?
Exactly. Yeah.
But but I think that's such a good point, because history and power and all that goes to whoever won. It's not about like idealism or what is quote unquote right or wrong, or like morally true, or like who deserved something better. It's about who was stronger and faster and bigger. And Eustace and Dunk thinks this too. He's like, where are all the Blacks loyalists now? Like, surely, he says, there were thousands of them. Half the realm was for the Red Dragon and half was for the Black. Like, he must have seen them. He must have met other men like Eustace, but all of them have just kind of gone along with whatever the right, quote, the right thing to do is, which made me kind of like Eustace more. Because I was like, at least he's bitter. He's in his like sad place. His family is gone. And I think that his bitterness is killing him. But he's holding on to an ideal that he has true conviction, and he actually really believed in something. And I think that, like I said, that could kill you, you know, especially in his old age, like as he's just going to spend his life.
And that he might literally just go to war.
Yeah.
Go to some kind of small battle just to prove that point further, because he is in such a bad situation, because his age is so advanced. He might just be a little more reckless than average,
mm-hmm.
than the average rebel would be at the time. And he has less power than I assume a lot of the rebels that Bloodraven was setting up to be a potential problem have as well. It's funny you brought that up, because that's exactly the thought process that Dunk went through right before they had the conversation with Eustace, right after the encounter with Bennis, when they're approaching Standfast at night, was that that's the thought process he had before he went in and went inside and then went in on Eustis. He was like, honestly, I bet I've worked for, you just read the quote, but I bet I've worked for a bunch of these people before. And, right. And because of that, he went in with a way more cool head. Mm-hmm. And not until Eustis threatened to potentially beat Egg did he decide to get a little chippy back.
He takes
back
it a little too far. But it was powerful. Because he has true conviction.
Yeah, he's proving to us that he's this character that we think that he is. That he's not taking the momentum of his conversation with the Red Widow and the slap on the face and being angry. I mean, it was a long horse ride too. And there's a lot of things to be annoyed about, but he thinks about it before he decides to make his judgment call on the kind of person that Eustis is. He hears him out. And he's also coming off the momentum of having all those things be offered to him, things that he really wants.
Right.
Clearly.
Right.
Things that would be really convenient for someone like him.
And hottie.
And that's what I'm saying. That's really what I'm talking about.
He's coming back. Was that the beginning of the chapter? He's like, I can't be thinking about her.
Mm-hmm.
So is he thinking about my other girl that I haven't seen in a
while?
Oh,
that was at the end. Yeah. He felt stupid because, it seems like the Red Widow is not, that Lady Rohan Weber is not giving him the same feeling inside of his stomach that Tonsel did.
Right.
But also that she is giving him a lot of other feelings, and that might be totally okay too. But which one is more true to his actual spirit? Which one's more true to his actual vibe?
Those girlies are into him, so it doesn't matter.
I mean, they probably could be. Yeah. You don't think that they're into him even a little bit?
They might be, but it's nothing to get existential over.
So funny. All this existential choices that he's making would seemingly right now in this tumultuous state of Westeros point you down the path of some kind of ruin, because you're talking about there needing to be power in that the way that history is writing itself goes to the course of the winter. And so something that Baelor Breakspear knew and implemented a lot in the Hedge Knight, which is what helped give us some kind of kernel of success, or at least allowed us to escape without Dunk losing his foot, is that knowing better is good and well, but having the power to set up the chess pieces before the action is necessary, no matter who knows what, is the only way to actually express that knowing better. And Dunk is not really expressing that knowing better. He has the balls to tell someone whose castle that he's going to be sleeping in at night that he's going to be leaving his service in the morning. Mm-hmm. So it's a little unbelievable, but at the same time, we've got that affability that Dunk is expressing that I think keeps him in this charismatic state amongst would-be potential enemies and would-be potential danger, and allows us to look at it and observe what direction things go in based on how naive he's being.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always the boot too.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna be really interesting to see this put on a TV screen.
Yeah, 1,000%. As you're saying that, I'm thinking about how he would have definitely made jury in Big Brother.
Yeah, he would have definitely made jury, but probably not final three.
He's not manipulating the situation that much. But this is my question then, which you know the answer to, but he's leaving. He's like, I'm out of here. We're done. We're going. And then Wattswood catches on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And so what kind of momentum shift that's going to be?
What do you think?
I mean, he's not going to leave while the woods ablaze.
Not going to leave his boys.
Yeah, he's not going to leave his, because it's not about Sir Eustis at that point, or Bennis. It's about all those other guys that he's been training up.
And so what would someone like Bennis of the Brown Shield be like in this scenario? He probably load his horse up with as much wine as he could carry, as much alloyed steel.
If I was Bennis,
the most jewels,
leave
a couple cups,
yeah,
like Benny from Benny from The Mummy.
Yeah, right. True. If I was Bennis, I would leave, because you got.
So you wouldn't stay and fight.
If I was Bennis.
Yeah. Oh, if you're Bennis. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I would absolutely leave if I was Bennis, because you've got this bigger, stronger castle up the road that probably did this or had something to do with this. Who wants to kill you? And then you've got Dunk in your ear, who's being so annoyingly
pious.
Yeah, okay,
it's not right.
You're not better than the rest of us. I would get out of there, but there's no way Dunk is gonna drag them out of there while something bad is happening. So,
what do you think Egg wants to do in this scenario? Like, do you think he'll feel the danger? Obviously, the fire doesn't bother him that much.
Well, that's what I was thinking about. Like, because Eustace is calling, he's like, you're.
Talking about that string of insults that he laid out upon Don.
Yeah. Like,
that's so disrespectful.
It was mean, you know?
The second that this person is not giving you what you want, all of a sudden, these things that you basically told him that he wasn't, he all of a sudden is. Oh, yeah. You're going to be prowling in the ditches. Basically, you're going to turn into an outlaw. Mm-hmm. You're going to turn into the thing that you've been fighting against trying to be. And he's given you no evidence. He rolled up the cloak and handed it back to you. He didn't keep your fine silk, your fine materials. He gave it back to you. And he heard you out first. So I'm less loving Eustace. But at the same time, what do you expect folks to do in this scenario?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I totally agree with you. I don't like Eustace. I just respect him a little more for having conviction. But Dunk is not going to just leave him in this situation because it's not about him.
I think he would have more conviction for me if he would have told Dunk exactly the scenario. But he did tell, you know, at least the neutral perspective about the battle. But the thing is, he kind of did what the Twitter thing right now that we were talking about is that he gave just enough information to try to tip the needle into his favor, but not too much further into his favor. But still, he tried to tip it a little artificially rather than being very straight up about it.
Fair, but he did give some good points as to why he picked the side he picked.
He did now. I think beforehand he was just talking about how glorious the battle was.
Also, he was,
and how Blood Ravens ensorcelled everyone, so their side, it's not fair at all.
And how good Damon's abs were is basically.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about
a
that. Because at the beginning of this discussion, you were like, he talked about his reasons, and he had pretty good reasons to follow Damon Blackfyre.
Yeah, but he talks about why, like, how he was a better swordsman, and like the knights gathered around him. You know, like, I found that to be interesting. Oh, yeah. So Egg, I love that Egg asked this question. Egg asked him. He's like, so why did you? He was like, King Darren was a good man. Why would you choose Damon?
It's one of the best parts of this section.
Darren, Sir Eustace almost slurred the word, and Dunk realized he was half drunk. Darren was spindly and round of shoulder with a little belly that wobbled when he walked. Damon stood straight and proud. His stomach was flat and hard as an oaken shield. And he could fight. I mean, okay. Go on. With an axe or a lance or a flail, he was as good as any knight as I ever saw. But with the sword, he was the warrior himself. When Prince Damon had Blackfyre in his hand, there was not a man to equal him. You can know a man by his friend's egg. Daeron surrounded himself with maesters, septons, and singers. Always there were women whispering in his ear, and his court was full of Dornishmen. How not?
Look how George threw Dornishmen.
I know. When he had taken a Dornish woman into his bed and sold his own sweet sister to the Prince of Dorne, though it was Daemon that she loved, Daeron borne the same name as the young dragon, but when his Dornish wife gave him a son, he named the child Baelor after the feeblest king who ever sat the Iron Throne.
Talk about getting into the detail, getting the weeds here. He's still named him after Targaryen.
These are so specific.
I know.
And these all happened so long ago. It's like he's really holding on. Daemon, though. Daemon was no more pious than a king need to be. And all the great knights of the realm gathered to him. It would suit Lord Bloodraven if their names were all forgotten, so he has forbidden us to sing of them. But I remember. Rob Rain, Gareth the Grey, Sir Aubrey Ambrose, Lord Gorman Peak, Black Byron Flower, Red Tusk, Fireball, Bittersteel. I ask you, has there ever been such a noble company, such a roll of heroes? Why, lad? You ask me why? Because Daemon was the better man. The old king saw it too. He gave the sword to Daemon, Blackfyre, the sword of Aegon the Conqueror, the blade that every Targaryen king had wielded since the conquest. He put that sword in Daemon's hand and the day he knighted him, a boy of 12. My father says that because Daemon was a swordsman and Daeron never was, said Aeg. Why give a horse to a man who cannot ride? The sword was not the kingdom. The old knight's hand jerked so hard that wine spilled from his silver cup. Your father is a fool. And then basically Dunk's like, okay, we'll leave. We're done here.
So it's like Daemon's power, if there are batteries that have to be filled up to potentially usurp and run the kingdom, or not to usurp, but just to either fight a usurper or to usurp, to run the kingdom, you got to have these powers built up. So his powers are strength and the support of people who matter.
And people who are strong.
and people who are strong, and the actual ability to do the thing.
And the sword.
And the sword. And Darren's batteries would be filled up by, he carries the technicalities, kind of like how Blood Raven's not a Trueborn, even though he's from the blood of Targaryens. Technically speaking, he's Baseborn. So he doesn't have that power behind his decision-making or power behind his sway until it comes to battle and we're all evenly matched in the sport of combat. Mm-hmm. And so Darren's batteries are filled up by there being, he's the one who's in charge.
Mm-hmm. He's got the maesters.
His batteries are filled up by the conquest of Aegon the Conqueror himself. And that power that was solidified over the crown being passed from ruler to ruler and rebellion after rebellion being squashed and all the lives that were lost and the ferocity of dragons holding that down, that is all in his favor, while there's this current modern day favor that Daemon is wielding. And that's what clashed head to head. It's not exactly the scenario between Renly and Stannis, but it's very similar. You have the technical support. You have the fact that you can be a real leader. The fact that you have the backing of a spirit like Brienne of Tarth, but also the backing of people with special interests and with people that just simply don't like Stannis, all with you. And then Stannis has the support of technicality.
Yeah.
Right. And hopefully the support of Neddard Stark, which I think in the Seven Kingdoms goes a long way.
One technicality goes a long way with Stannis, too.
Yes, it very much does. It's so funny to talk about Stannis that behind all of that real battery being filled by the technical power and by the historical significance is that he's got this hot, red-haired lady that's doing magic in the shadows.
I know. And giving it to him sometimes.
Exactly. Exactly.
If he's lucky.
If he's lucky. If he's a really good boy. Yeah. It's very interesting.
It is interesting. But I mean,
this is more straightforward in a classical historical way. Well, it's a little bit more simple.
The perspective is in hindsight and everything is way more.
Yeah, I think you're right. But there's like less technology too, though. Like, or, and you know, there's been less war. I don't know. Yeah, you're right, though.
But Egg makes such a good point when he's like, well, what his dad says, that the sword was not the kingdom.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the like practical thing that someone says in a conversation that stumps you because you're not invoking this past truth. You're right. Saying right now what actually makes sense. Me personally, that's the kind of conversations I like to have because you're dealing with facts in yeah. real time. You're dealing right. with what's actually real instead of invoking the poetry of something that came before you.
But I understand why Eustace chose why he chose. Like, I understand why he would be drawn to, especially as like a lesser lord, the chaos of somebody who was physically powerful.
Basically a simpering musical guy.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good opportunity. And Egg's like, or Dunk or Egg were like, so you wanted cold.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's the other really important question like,
well,
that Egg
no,
asked.
No, you know, it was more about his abs.
He's like, but you wanted the castle. Stronger. You wanted yeah. the castle, though, right?
He does
and
not
you
answer
knew that.
That
in the chaotic shakeup of power that there'd be a possibility
Wasn't
for you
to
get back
to
something that you thought your family deserved, but more so than him claiming that it was because that's what his family deserved. He doesn't claim it at all, but more so than that, it's like, what about the fact that you would simply just have a castle?
I have to read this because it's the castle. He seemed confused. Coldmoat was promised to me by Daemon. Yes, but it was not for gain. No. Then why? Asked Egg. Why? Sir Eustace frowned. Why were you a traitor if it wasn't for the castle?
Oh,
Sir Eustace looked at Egg a long time before replying. You're only a young boy. You yeah. would not understand.
Yeah. It was my family's.
Right. Okay.
That was so good.
Egg is a sharp one. I mean, obviously.
Yeah.
But he asks such good questions.
And he's sharp and he's kind of like Dunk. Definitely like Dunk. He's one of the people that is worth us following in a book that we feel okay with being friends with because his decisions, the way that he comes to terms with his thoughts, makes sense to us. But like you said earlier in discussion, I feel like he learned a really important lesson about something like casual racism, mm-hmm. which is what Eustace is feeling about these Dornishmen, not feeling weird about that fact at all. It's like it's just an agreed upon thing. That's how Egg feels about people that are baseborn, mm-hmm. it seems. And I would never have assumed that about Egg, having such a straightforward opinion about bastards. I understand someone like Jon Snow in the main series feeling the weight and feeling the pain of having been raised in Winterfell and constantly feeling scorned upon by the matron of the place and constantly feeling like he was not as good as his true-born brothers and sisters. I understand him having negative thoughts and feelings toward a bastard or toward the idea of having a bastard and having such extreme things to say about it and maybe even going deep enough into his soul and spirit to forcing him to make a decision like joining the wall. Joining the Night's Watch at the Wall and taking a vow to never potentially sire another bastard so he wouldn't bring another person like him to this world. I understand that. But Egg's coming from the perspective of just having been raised around people that are surviving off of that comfort that the earlier power that I discussed earned them. And so they're able to look around and say, you know, bastards are this and that. Well, at the same time, there's, you know, there's what's it called that the Targaryens have, the exceptionalism.
Yeah.
Like at the same time, they're having sex with their brothers and sisters and cousins. And only so it's them. Like, yeah, you're not baseborn, but you're also inbred. Uh-huh. So there's a technical science to that, that may say that you're actually, if we're going to get into the weeds of who's better based on how they were born or what blood or DNA is inside of them, you have really, you know, nothing to, you have no ground to stand on. So it's like I said, a lot uglier coming from someone like Egg. And this, I'll read this inner monologue that Dunk had about himself. And it's part of that swirling, as I was talking about, painting of points to sort of give us an idea of what decision is valuable enough to consider as the truth, even if it comes out of the mouth of a bastard. The opinion on someone like Eustace, the opinion on someone like Bennis, and the opinion on someone like Rohan, or really most importantly, the opinion on someone like yourself. I might be. I never knew my mother or what became of her. Maybe I was born too big and killed her. Most like she was some whore or tavern girl. You don't find highborn ladies down in Flea Bottom. And if she ever wed my father, well, what became of him then? Dunk did not like to be reminded of his life before Sir Arlen found him. There was a pot shop in King's Landing where I used to sell them rats and cats and pigeons for the brown. So we know who's partially responsible for this now. Finally, after all these books, the cook always claimed my father was some thief or cut purse. Most like I saw him hanged, he used to tell me. But maybe they just sent him to the wall. When I was squiring for Sir Arlen, I would ask him if we couldn't go up that way someday to take service at Winterfell or some other northern castle. I had this notion that if I could only reach the wall, might be I'd come on some old man, a real tall man, who looked like me. We never went, though. Sir Arlen said that there were no hedges in the north, and all the woods were full of wolves. He shook his head. The long and short of it is, most like you're squiring for a bastard. For once, Egg had nothing to say. The gloom was deepening around them. Lantern bugs moved slowly through the trees, their little lights like so many drifting stars. There were stars in the sky as well, more stars than any man could ever hope to count, even if he lived to be as old as King Jaehaerys. So I feel like these lantern bugs are the little particles of Egg's soul moving into place and realizing that he's been thinking so wrong for such a long time, and all these stars in the sky are all the other things that we could learn the truth about, or maybe all the other people that are still learning the truth for themselves. I love that illustrated a side there at the end of that conversation, and that the gloom deepening around them being that I guess shame that they're both feeling, the shame of being a bastard, the shame of having thought that way about people. And obviously, if you love and respect Dunk so much, what does it matter where he came from? He could quite literally be the worst of them, mm-hmm. and he could come from the worst of them as well.
Especially because Egg was just saying that the High Septon said all bastards are born to betrayal. I mean, like, he's so cutting about mm-hmm. who they are.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, shame. Or just, I feel like just that realization when you're, whoa, sorry. I feel like
dropped her Apple Pencil.
That is so embarrassing.
Called out.
That shame or introspectiveness or I don't know what the right word is, but when you realize that your opinions have been wrong or that you were taught something deepening. Wrong. Yeah, I mean, it's such a good way to describe
really
it.
Really good.
And to be confronted with that against somebody that you care about so much at this point in the story.
It's the best
so
way.
So late in the game.
It's the most effective. Someone it you works, know you love and respect. So. You're willing to follow.
I hope that Egg is able to translate these lessons or at least take like really take a lot of these things back to his fam because these are really valuable things that from the top down could change the way that somebody like Sir Eustace himself like lives, you know?
Yeah, like how do you treat rebels? Do you treat them with clemency? Do you chop off their heads?
Or I mean, bastards? Or how do you, like, people, yeah, like,
I think it's all
like
the
people who
I think
are
it's all the same
you?
Thing. Yeah, I think it's all the same thing. Like, there's the most extreme version is this person literally rebelled against me.
Right.
In the glorious sport of combat, where the person that wins could live and the person that loses could die. Then there's all these smaller versions of it, all the way down to the way that you might converse with people in a room full of conversers, the way you look at them, the way you don't look at them, open-handedness versus bolstering against the potential chaos. It's pretty interesting. And it's an interesting mindset to analyze among the story with the little kid. And that's why I was saying it's really cool to see this on the screen.
Yeah.
And then there's Bennis.
I know.
A warrior against the world, sitting on his pedestal in the night with the moon glowing behind him, and you can hear the singing of his steel being sharpened. He's been battered, and he's already chosen how he's going to fight against it by living amongst the grooves of right and wrong, comfortably, and waiting until that moment that he has to strike.
I feel like what makes this story so incredible is that juxtaposition between those guys and just the completely opposite paths that brought them to the same exact place that Dunk and Bennis, they're
why,
like, we're all
Bennis
here.
Bennis is always making fun of Dunk.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah, he's like, you're here too.
You tall, idealistic, handsome, dolt, thick as a castle. I don't even, and he's just mad at him just for existing.
Just for being who
just
he
for
is.
Just for existing.
I get it.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be really, really cool to see those relationships blossom on screen because of how good House of the Dragon is. Like these, I just have so much confidence that these, and with all the source material, like
I believe
these vibes are going to be able to be.
I believe
translated.
Ryan's going
to
be an executive. Ryan Condal's going to be an executive producer on this Dunk and Egg series. I saw that written somewhere. I didn't see that in this article, so I can't quote that for truth. But if George R. R. Martin trusts him enough, and obviously Hot D understood the themes and adapted some things even further, especially like what they did with Viserys. Pushing further points, yeah. pushing more of the spirit that we're all feeling from this and displaying it in a way where it was able to translate to the screen. I think that we're in good hands if that's the case.
Remember reading Viserys versus like every heart picture we posted of him on our Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And those are available right now on Instagram.com/Game of Bones. Just click on the House of the Dragon button and our highlights.
Oh man, this is good stuff.
So, my own, Hannah discussed prior, but I will read it anyway. When Dunk and Egg approach Sir Binnis in the night, you'll find Sir Useless in his chambers, brooding on how great he used to be. Egg spoke up. He fought for the Black Dragon. Dunk could have given the boy a clout, but the Brown Knight only laughed. Course he did. Just look at him. He strike you as the kind who picks the winning side? No more than you, else you wouldn't be here with us. Boom.
That's a known. I'm going to give my own to not too far after that, about a couple sentences when they first get to Eustace. The first thing he says, Sir Duncan, you're back. Did the sight
Oh, God,
you...
I know what you're going to say. Keep going, keep going.
Did the sight of you give Lucas Infield pause, sir? He thought that if he sent someone taller, that he would have the upper hand. Or almost as tall. Like, if he thought he sent someone big, that he would have the upper hand.
I also liked where he was like, she struck you?
Oh, yeah.
She dared lay a hand upon you?
like trying to incur that diplomacy, not like what they're all doing is just a messed up farce in itself, right. But like, how dare she?
More posturing. Strikes
the envoy of the Cheki Lion?
Yeah. Great posturing. I have one more own before we get to everybody else's. When Eustace is talking about his clemency that has been granted, a king's mercy is a poisoned gift. Daeron Targaryen left me life, but took my pride and dreams and honor. I should have gone with bitter steel into exile or died beside my son and my sweet king. That would have been a death worthy of a Cheki Lion descended from so many proud lords and mighty warriors. Daeron's mercy made me smaller. That really cut me. Like, his mercy made me small. Like, he took away who I was as a man, and Eustace wasn't able to then just assimilate back into society like the rest of the followers.
Or die. Standing up for the man that he wants to be.
Daeron's mercy made me smaller.
I'm allowed to live. That's actually pretty nice.
Yeah.
It's kind of like Dunk running away from this fight or not.
Exactly. So I want to give my own to that too.
We have an own from Travis Cole. We also have a string of owns from Travis Cole has rejoined the Onosphere. And we'll be reading some more of those. They're for Hedge Knight Part 1 and some of these Sworn Sword parts on our next episode. We have a little bit more time. Our recording window is swiftly closing today. So I'll read this one own from Travis Cole, Straight Savage Cole on Twitter. My own goes to the Blue of the Ice Dragon, which is Westeros' version of the North Star. I love how George makes fantasy analogies for things from reality. Chef's kiss. I also have to shout out Dunk for two things. Staying true to his convictions and values, even if it meant breaking an oath he took, especially if the oath was under false pretenses. Didn't you ever think I might be a bastard? This is exactly the type of thing that Mycor wanted Dunk to question Egg with. Things that made Egg think in different ways. Mm-hmm. Boom.
There you go.
Travis Cole's back. And
if you want to send in your owns, you can do that in a couple different ways. You can find us on Instagram or on Twitter. You can send us an email to contact@gameofowns.com if you dare. But I would recommend Instagram or Twitter.
On our next episode, we will be continuing through The Sworn Sword in Part 6, Fire and Steel. Did Hannah guess correctly? Was it Lady Rohan Weber and Lucas Inchfield who decided to plot forward to Coldmoat? To Standfast from Coldmoat? What do you think? Find out on the next.
Or maybe the trailer is going to be the next episode.
Oh, yeah.
Not that I don't want to get to Sworn Sword Part, 6? Mm-hmm. But, wow, we're blessed.
So, we'll catch y'all later.
We'll see ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye.